Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 291 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host once again. And today my guest is Russell Farbiars. Now, Russell is a estate planning attorney who also does estate administration and some real estate work in the eastern region of Pennsylvania. And we're going to have a discussion here about how he transitioned from essentially doing criminal law work as a district attorney to finally settling in on estate planning, and how the needs in terms of how you approach the acquisition of clients and the tools that we use for estate planning differ from that of other practice areas. But I think there's a carryover because you can see relevance to some of the tools and some of the techniques that he's employing in his practice, regardless of what you may be practicing yourself. So it's not exclusively for estate planning attorneys, but it is illustrative, and I think it's pretty valuable. So I hope you enjoy listening to my friend Russell Farbiars. Russell Farbiars, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you very much, Neil. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm delighted to have you with us today, Russell. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Sure. So I am primarily an estate planning, estate administration, and real estate attorney. I'm based in southeastern Pennsylvania, a little town called Hamburg in Berks County, Pennsylvania. And I have worked... sort of interesting how you got mm-hmm. to where I am today. In a lot of ways, it seems like I just sort of got here, and I know that sounds strange.
No, I think it happens to a lot of us. You when they ask how do you get here, like, I don't know, just something happened, and here I am, and I'm practicing estate planning law. I'm not really sure how I fell into it, but into it I am.
Yeah. So I think what happened, I went to law school, and I did what everyone thinks they should do when they come out of law school, is I went and I clerked for a trial court. Yeah. So I clerked for the trial court in southwestern Vermont. I had no intention of actually practicing in Vermont, but it had been ingrained in my head for 3 years of law school that's what you do. Yeah. Is that you, especially I was on law review, so it was in my mind that was what my next step needed to be. And I'll tell you, while it was a great experience, I don't think it was a necessary step. And ultimately, I did move to where I am now. I started in the district attorney's office, and then I did go into private practice initially with my father-in-law, who's now retired, and took over a practice that he had, which was largely estate planning, estate administration. And so I guess in some sense, that's how I ended up where I am now.
Yeah. Now, isn't it interesting? We talk about the law school experience a lot, and while I'm on my soapbox a little bit, this whole idea that there's one path or there's the best path. And that is either you clerk for a judge or you work in big law as an associate of some sort. And for the vast majority of law school students, that's not a realistic possibility. I mean, it's not something that they want to do.
I agree. And I think when I was in law school, it was, you know, there were boxes that I felt were needed to be checked to sure. have a successful career. And so it was, you know, get into the honors program, check, mm-hmm. get on law review, check. Okay. Now you're going to graduate. You need to go clerk, and it doesn't matter where, for who, you know, and I remember clerking in it was a relatively small community. And I remember attorneys being confused as to why I was clerking, but had no intention of practicing in that area. Because I think what a lot of people don't, a lot of law students don't know is that if you're going to clerk at the trial court level, it's very valuable if it's a community where you want to practice, but if it's a community where you don't intend to be, while you can learn a lot of interesting things, you can learn how to write legal opinions and whatnot, it is not necessarily going to advance your career.
Or transfer to another location easily.
Right. And so when I came to the area that I'm in, I really had two job offers. One was to clerk again for another judge, and one was to work in the DA's office. And I chose the DA's office because I was sort of tired of sitting behind a desk, you know, researching things for someone else. Yeah. I wanted to actually have my own experiences, and I don't regret that.
Right. And now it's interesting that you chose to work in the district attorney's office, practicing at that point almost exclusively criminal law.
Right, especially because criminal law was what I said was the last thing I ever wanted to do.
Right, and I did the exact opposite. I thought, well, that's what I want to do. I want to put bad guys in jail, and that's what I thought I was going to do until it came time to do it, and I thought, nah. You know, let me see what else is out there. And I went in a different direction. So one of the things I like about the law is that you have that flexibility and you can, you know, make those choices as things change in your life. Now, you get into Southwest Pennsylvania there and you get involved with another firm. Now you're transitioning to primarily estate planning. What are the challenges there as you transition from criminal defense to estate planning?
Well, when I was working in the DA's office, it was, you were in court all the time. Yeah. And, but I'll tell you, I never really understood what it meant to interview a client and, you know, actually have to convince a client that they needed to pay me for the work I was going to do. I'll never forget the first time a client gave me a check. I know that sounds like a silly thing. And it was actually, ironically, it was a criminal defense case because, you know, when I first came to the practice, I really didn't know how to do anything. I mean, I remember my father-in-law like literally explaining to me what an acknowledgement or a notary affidavit on a deed was. But I'll never forget, it was a juvenile criminal case that, you know, that I needed, that the client needed help with. And I'll never forget that, like, they handed me a check and they left. And I had this big smile on my face, like I finally made it.
Right. I got my first silly little case, but they're paying me for it. And here I am. I'm an attorney now, right?
Right.
Yeah. Well, then I tell people it's a different paradigm, I think, when you move from, say, criminal defense or personal injury or even family law at times. You know, people come to your office in need of legal services because something's happened to them in their life and that requires it. On the other hand, estate planning, you very often have to educate the client as to why they really need estate planning. Because for a lot of people, they, you know, they're not aware of the necessity of having an estate plan in place. So how do you bridge that gap, that paradigm shift?
Well, we were very fortunate, especially pre-pandemic, because our firm has existed in the same location since 1946 in a fairly small town where people, if they wanted to have to get a will done, this was the number they called and they got it done. And I don't think that we did a very good job pre-pandemic and really that education piece, because I think to some extent we didn't need to. We were busy enough. A very large part of our practice is actually the probate side. You did an episode, I don't know how long ago, with an attorney in Florida who only does probate, and that just fascinated me because we do at least 50 or 60% of my business is probably administering estates. But I have definitely started to branch out into the area of trying to educate clients or potential clients. And now, we have email campaigns. We've started doing, and by started, I mean, the first one is tomorrow, a series of webinars. I've sort of done ad hoc webinars before, but never really as part of a, deliberate campaign. And, pre-pandemic, every once in a while, I would be asked to speak. I would give in-person trainings, and if I got two or three people, I'd consider it a success.
Yeah. Well, I think this is a perfect example of how the delivery of legal services is changing over the course of time, because you very much, when you got started then, were in that situation where you had an existing practice who was already well known, and you didn't really have to do a whole lot to attract clients to the firm. They came because of a need that they had. And in a lot of cases, it was an estate administration. So again, there's a difference there between estate administration and estate planning, in that in the administration, somebody's passed away and they need help, fumbling through that process. So I see a lot of estate attorneys these days who are bridging that gap between planning and administration for just that reason, because administration can lead to planning cases and vice versa.
Right. The reason that we have such a large administration practice is, and this was more the practice, say, 30, 40, 50 years ago, is that if you wrote the will, you did the estate.
Right.
That was when there
that was the norm.
That was the norm. And there were a lot fewer lawyers. But now there's more lawyers, there's more competition, there's advertising. Because remember, there wasn't advertising all those years ago.
Exactly.
So you can't rely anymore on, well, if I wrote the will, then I'm going to get that business. It's just not that way anymore. I think that you have a far higher chance of getting that business if you wrote the will.
And if you want it.
Right. Sometimes you don't.
Right, exactly.
But I do find that because there are more choices, because there's the internet, because there's the concept with some people that they don't want to pay someone else to do this job, because sometimes you have accountants or CPAs who will tell a client, yeah, I can do an inheritance tax return for you. And there are reasons why you need to continually educate clients so that they will stay with you.
Absolutely. And, let's circle back a little bit here, because I'm fascinated to hear then how you were able to drag your firm kicking and screaming into the modern era. Because as you said, now we have advertising, now we have the internet, now we have COVID, and so things have to be done differently than they were done 10, 15, 20 years ago. So what were some of the challenges as you made that transition?
Well, first thing, my father-in-law did leave the firm, I think it was 2014. He was appointed to fill out an unexpired term for a judge who had been elevated to the federal bench. Huh. He's of the older generation of, he would never buy into a lot of the a lot of the stuff that we do now to attract clients.
But didn't have to either.
Right. Didn't have to. But you also have to remember that a lot of my training was from him.
Right.
So it definitely, there's definitely a thought process change. And I will say that as we were in late 2018, early 2019, I was starting to see that there were other ways to attract business, but I was also very busy. But I wasn't necessarily busy with the right things, but I was busy. And so it was hard to figure out exactly, you know, how to move to the next step. We had started to implement, you know, e-signatures on contracts or engagement letters. We had started to use, you know, more modern practice development software. We were getting into, at that point, Clio Grow. Mm-hmm. I eventually swapped out Clio Grow for Lawmatics, and I've since swapped out Clio Manage for Smokeball.
So you're a Lawmatic Smokeball guy these days?
These days, yes. Yeah. Yes. And then the pandemic happened and everything stopped. And yeah, at least for me, I sort of looked around and realized I didn't like what I was seeing, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think this happened to a lot of people, is that, you know, with life, you just sort of keep going because you have to keep going. But then when you're forced to stop and sort of look around and say, is this what I want to do for the next 30 years? For me, the answer was no.
Interesting.
And what I didn't like was that I was at the office until 7 o'clock every night. I was missing bedtime most of the time with my kids. I have three kids, the oldest of which is 10, the youngest of which is now 4. And I didn't want to keep missing all of those things.
Sure.
So there changes need to be made. I still, to this day, I work from home usually 4 days a week, because I can. Mm-hmm. I started implementing Zoom, obviously, at the beginning of the pandemic, and continue to use it to this day. I think it's a very effective way of meeting with clients, and it allows you to do it from wherever you are. There's no reason I need to be sitting in my office to do that. But I've also started to look at, you know, trying to attract different clientele. And I feel like I can market my services to a larger audience now because I can use things like Zoom or telephone consultations, or, you know, the deciding factor is no longer, are you within a certain driving distance of my office?
Well, also, I'm going to guess that when your father-in-law was practicing and initially when you joined the firm, in those days, law firms had lots of practice areas because they did just about a little bit of everything for everybody. I'm sensing now from you in our discussion that that's now been honed down and that you're focusing almost exclusively on estate planning and estate administration.
So he was actually fairly niched down.
How was
it? His partner, though, sort of did everything else. So I sort of came in and at that point, you know, was young and ambitious and was like, well, we can do this and we can do that, you know, and sort of to fill the need. Like in our area, there was definitely a need for family law because there was no one else in the area who was doing divorces and doing custody cases. And So I started doing those. I actually made the decision earlier this year to cut those out and to just finish what we had, not take anything new, and to really sort of, you know, I went broad, and now I definitely am going smaller, you know, right, trying to focus on the estate planning, the estate administration.
Well, with three kids, family life, and you want to decouple yourself from the courthouse and from the courthouse schedule. So, you need to start and hone down on something that allows you a little more flexibility if that's what you're shooting for.
And that's really been my goal is I don't want to be practicing law in anything that requires me to adhere to the courthouse norm.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to go to court. And you know, doing court, you know, over Zoom or telephone for a year and a half has really focused for me what an absolute waste of time going to court. And the fact that our court system pretty much held their breath for 18 months and then went back to the way exactly the way it was before. I am so frustrated, and I just don't want to, I pretty much have just decided to opt out of it. I don't want to be a part of it.
Yeah. Well, and to all my litigating friends, and it's not to demean your pursuit or your choices. I get it. There are some people that live for the action of the courtroom environment. They love it. They love going, they love being that person. And that's great. That's what we need. And we need attorneys who can do that and provide justice to folks who need to avail themselves of the court system. But there are others that have come to the same conclusion that you have, and as have I to a degree, that I'm going to go in a different direction.
Right. And the one great thing, though, is that our Register of Wills has taken the position, along with a majority of the Register of Wills across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, that probate proceedings no longer need to be in person, that they can be done over Zoom. And so those have continued and will continue to be done over Zoom, which is great because it's a 15-minute proceeding at best.
Right.
And to drag everyone in there for that, I used to tell
people it takes me longer to tie my tie than some of these proceedings take in court. And so, yeah, it's much easier to do on Zoom.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is brought to you by Center Stage and the Law Firm Marketing Minute, two great podcasts produced by Spotlight Branding. We're a legal marketing company providing content marketing for law firms that actually works. And we created these shows as a free resource to help lawyers like you learn more about marketing and business development. Every Monday, the Law Firm Marketing Minute arrives with a short 10-minute dose of marketing tips and inspiration to help you grow your firm. On Wednesdays, Center Stage arrives with perspective from other lawyers and legal industry experts to help you tackle marketing and other business development challenges. Check both of these shows out on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pandora, and more. Both shows make great companions for the law entrepreneur, so subscribe today. Hope to see you there soon.
Now, if you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. And this episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight, the all-in-one contact relationship manager, or CRM. I've been using Daylight for well over 10 years now, and it's the best CRM for business on the Mac and iPhone. And despite having a case management platform that I'm very happy with, I still use Daylight to handle all of my many other law firm needs. When you're running your own law firm, it can be difficult to stay on top of follow-ups, keep track of details and communication, and stay aware of what needs to be done next on each project. Daylight organizes everything in one place, so you don't have to rely on your memory to keep it all straight. If you're feeling like it's time to upgrade from spreadsheets to a CRM, check out Daylight. You can download it from the App Store or visit www.marketcircle.com and try it free for 30 days. On top of that, you can get your first month free when you tell them you heard about Daylight here on The Law Entrepreneur. Daylight by Market Circle, staying top of mind without the stress. So obviously Zoom is one of the technologies that you're using quite a bit. You say that you're a Lawmatix and Smokeball guy. What are you doing for billing and accounting?
Well, Smokeball has billing. I have transitioned almost entirely to flat fees. which yep. makes billing a heck of a lot easier.
Sure.
And then our accounting has it, we were using QuickBooks. We started using QuickBooks Online, I think pre-pandemic. And I have an external bookkeeper who does the accounting work remotely.
Yeah. So it's a pretty standard setup for, I think, for most people
right.
these days. And now you mentioned that you were just starting to implement a webinar program to provide content for potential clients. How is that being implemented, and what got you started down that path?
So it's something that I've been meaning to do for quite some time. And I, you know, been thinking about doing it. I created the presentation, and then I sort of sat on it. And then about a week, 2 weeks ago, I just thought, sort of said to myself, why am I not doing this? And I went in and I, you know, created the Facebook ads for it. And I'm using a program called Demio, which a lot of other attorneys are using for this type of thing. I spoke to some other estate planning attorneys who are doing similar type things, and just decided I'm gonna just set up a schedule. And so I have my first one is tomorrow night. So we're recording this on November 1st. So that's November 2nd. Mm-hmm. And then I have another one on November 9th. And I have been amazed that I think I have 9 or 10 people registered for tomorrow. I've only really been pushing it out there for about a week. It's sort of interesting because I have all this set up so that someone clicks on the Facebook ad, they go to the Demio site and then they register. Well, I have a Zap set up so that actually zaps that information into Lawmatics. They get a welcome email, they get a text with their personalized link for the Demio session. And then I have an email drip campaign that you know, they're now getting, you know, a series of educational emails on estate planning. So my hope is, you know, I don't expect 10 people to show up. If I can get 5 people out of 10 that show up, I'd be ecstatic. And then, you know, if I could get 2 or 3 of those people to then set an appointment, you know, to do their estate plan, you know, I think that to me is like a home run because
yeah, it's all about the numbers. And it sounds to me like you come light years down this path because you've got all these pieces connected. They're all working together, which is from an automation perspective is what we really like to see. And if nothing else, you're building this mailing list that mm-hmm. be a tremendous resource to market to going forward. What's the email client that you're using to run your drip campaign?
It's through Lawmatics.
Okay.
So I don't know how familiar you are with Lawmatics, but Lawmatics is a great program because it takes a lot of these different pieces of marketing and puts them into one place. And so I have that email campaign. About a year ago, we started doing a monthly newsletter and doing a lot of active, you know, organic social media. So I have a social media person who does, you know, creates posts and whatnot, and she's also responsible for the newsletter. So the newsletter, I actually have to make sure it goes out today. But you know, I think that I've grown that list, you know, from a couple hundred to like, I think somewhere over 700 or 800 people at this point. So there's, you know, I do think it's all about just staying top of mind.
Yeah, for sure. Because staying top of mind, you want them to think of you when the need arises. But also, again, I think there's a huge educational component to this aspect of practicing law, and you're doing it. Your webinar isn't content that provides value and educating and identifying the clients that you would like to serve. and you're going to be doing this on a regular basis. Now, you said you designed the ads yourself, and did you design the Facebook ad campaign yourself, or how did that work?
Well, yes and no. I'm the one who did it. However, I did consult with other estate planning attorneys in other locations who have done something similar and have been successful with it.
Right.
So I can't take complete credit, but I did go in and get it set up.
Well, that's not a trivial thing either. I mean, how did you build the ad? Did you do that in Canva, or did you Adobe, or you got to build the ad somewhere?
So I do use Canva. I did actually, I'll say that I read a part of Andy Stickle's book on how to create, a video that would convert. And that's, what I did. And I'll tell you, I wrote out the script. I recorded it probably 7 or 8 times before I got one that I was satisfied with. And, and I'm running, I have that. I also created like an actual, an ad that by using, I used an image, I think it was from Unsplash. And then I had the text that went along with it. And I've been running both of them just sort of to see which one performs better. The video really performs a lot better than the static image. So and I think I knew that was going to be the case, but I wanted to do that testing. So
you're going
to
try it anyway. Yeah. For those who in our audience who don't know, if you don't know Andy Stickle, you're probably not paying attention because he's everywhere. And if you want to learn how to do video marketing, Andy's the guy. His books are great. He was just in our area last week. He was speaking at a conference here in the Washington, D.C. area last week. And unfortunately, I missed him, but Andy's a great guy. And then in terms of setting up the Facebook ad campaign, did you do that yourself, pick the audience, define the audience?
I did. I can't say completely without some help. I've been working with Greg Eisenberg at Legalese Marketing for a while. That's Jordan Ostroff's group.
Yep.
And so one of the things that Greg had done previously for me is he set I had done a video that was pretty much why work with our firm, and he set it up sort of as an evergreen campaign, and it, for whatever reason, it resonates with people, and I get a lot of through plays on Facebook. So one of the things I did was retargeted the ads to the people who had seen that video, because Greg had explained to me that by doing that, you're getting people who, this isn't the first time they've seen your face or heard you, so they're more likely to engage. Then I also have it set to that, there's certain types of people who are more likely to, sign up for an estate planning webinar, people who are interested in wealth management and I got a lot of that information from another estate planning attorney that I've worked with.
Well, and that's the beauty, I think, of Facebook ads, is you can target that audience based on their interests, based on their demographics, and you can really nail that down, start to A/B test those approaches till you really refine it to get in front of exactly the type of clients you hope to attract.
Right. And that's, I feel like I've been saying that this is what needs to happen for the better part of, the last 18 months. And I, in some ways I regret not doing this sooner, because I think it would have been, I would have gotten to the end goal, I guess, sooner. But I'm glad I'm at least doing it in moving forward, because it's better to do it than not to do it. But I've spent a lot of time over the last 18 months sort of spinning my wheels and trying to learn this and trying to learn that. I enrolled in the Legal Funnel course with Sam, I think it's Malai. I never can really say that right.
Yeah, Sam Malai.
And he's great. And I learned a lot from him, but I feel like I've spent a lot of time learning and not enough time doing.
Well, yeah, and that's usually the challenge with these kinds of things is to actually put the information into practice. I'm the same way when it came to video marketing. I just kept researching and reviewing and planning, and I never actually turned the camera on. And finally, somebody said to me, "Neil, just simply turn the camera on. You'll be surprised at the results that come about." I still don't turn it on long enough, but you know, there you are. Well, listen, Russell, this has been great. I wish you all the best of luck. Sounds like you've got a lot of things lined up, working the way you want them to work. Now it's just a matter of refining. I think the next time we chat, we ought to talk about, you know, how you're addressing staffing and expansion of your practice, because I think that's where you're heading.
Yeah, I would love to have a chat about that sometime. But great. Thank you so much.
Well, tell our audience how they can reach you and follow up on anything you've had to offer today.
Sure. You can always reach me on email, which is rfarbiarz, rfarbiarz at afalawfirm.com. You can visit our website, which is, it's probably easier if you just go to afalawfirm.com and that'll forward to our website, or find us. We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, and LinkedIn.
And we're going to have all those in our show notes so people can go there to link directly to all these resources and platforms. So, Russell, thanks again for being a guest today on The Law Entrepreneur, and I wish you all the best of luck going forward.
All right. Thanks, Neil.
Well, how about that? That's a wrap for this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I'd like to thank our sponsors once again, as usual, Daylight by Market Circle, Spotlight Branding, and Ruby, as in Ruby Receptionist. If you have a chance, swing on by our website at www.lawentrepreneur.com. You can check out a bunch of information and resources there. And if that doesn't satisfy your needs, swing on by our Facebook page or Twitter page. You can find those just by simply searching for The Law Entrepreneur. And if you'd be so kind, I would greatly appreciate it if you go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and an honest review. If you find this podcast is helpful and that you're getting value out of it, it does help with our visibility and ensures that we're going to be there for another 5 years or so, as this has been quite the run. And I'm greatly appreciative of your interest in The Law Entrepreneur.